Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
Here on our show, because we cover the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, we're always interested when others are paying attention to the faith. And right now, there are a lot of people interested in the Latter-day Saints living in Arizona. It's a critical swing state, and the Mormon voting bloc there could play a decisive role, maybe the decisive role in deciding the outcome of the presidential election. And here are the numbers that prove that. There are about 200,000 voting members of the church there, and in 2020, Joe Biden won the state by only 11,000 votes. So if you're a strategist for the Kamala Harris campaign, even though most Mormons are Republican these days, you probably figure if you get the message just right, you could peel off enough to make the difference. So we were interested in how these campaigns are appealing to Latter-day Saints, but we also wanted to know what was happening on the inside, like in the East Valley of the Phoenix metropolitan area, the ward houses and neighborhoods in Chandler and Gilbert and Scottsdale, where this election has been dividing members. Julie and Jeremy Spilsbury are Republicans. They voted for Donald Trump in 2016, but they're voting for Kamala Harris this year. Julie's on the Mesa City Council. Jeremy used to be the ward bishop, and a few years ago, after taking heat for changing his mind about Trump, he went back to school to get a degree in peace and conflict studies, which came in handy when he and Julie decided to get really public about their choice for president.
You know, I'm in my fourth year of my first term on the Mesa City Council, and I just won re-election August 1st, and I won 66-34, so I have definitely created some enemies for how I voted on some things. So the far right was mad at me already, but I started realizing that people were going, sorry, I'm so emotional today. I started realizing that people were going to make assumptions that because we are Republican, we're lifelong Republicans, and we are very active members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, that we were going to vote for Trump. And I just really decided that I could not let people make those assumptions about me. So we attended a Republicans for Harris event, and there was a stack of signs on the fireplace. And I wasn't going to go pick up a sign. And so, you know, I'm talking to people, and after it's over, we're mingling. And I looked over and I saw my husband and my neighbor pick up those signs. My heart dropped. And I literally turned to Jeremy and I said, oh, are we putting that sign in our yard? Is that what we're doing? And he said, yeah. Like, what's the point of trying to hide at this point, right? Like, I've put myself out there in some big ways. But for some reason, the sign just felt really hard for me, because that meant all of our neighbors, everyone in our ward, everyone that drove by was going to see it. But it was important for us to put the Republicans for Harris walls, because we're trying to help other Republicans and other LDS members know that there is another choice.
This is something we feel very strongly about. It does have to do with my passion for peace and conflict studies. Like, it's very important in peace building to not be conflict avoidant. And I want to confront it. I want to have these conversations. I want to be very vocal about the way I feel. And so that was an opportunity to do that.
We do feel like we're trying to be peacemakers, but that is not how it is always perceived.
So put it up the following morning.
Yeah. And I had a meeting that morning, and I was backing out of the driveway and saw it, and my heart just started racing when I saw that he'd actually put the sign up in the yard. But then also a moment of being proud that we were willing to stand up, like, okay, we're doing this. We're doing this.
So Sunday came around. I'm a ward missionary, so we have a little huddle at the end of church. And so one of the members of that committee is my neighbor. So we're there in the circle, and we wrap it up and kind of walking out with him and his wife, say goodbye. And so I come down the street right around the corner, and I see this new sign that I hadn't seen in their yard. Cux for Harris. And like my wife, I didn't know what it meant. You know, it looked like it was meant to offend. And so when I looked it up and saw just how derogatory it was, I was like, this is like calculated to like be as offensive as possible. I was angry. I was angry that a neighbor of mine who I've known for a long time, we're not close friends, but we care for them. They're good people. And so I was just really angry that they would act in such a way that would create a breach in our friendship or just be disrespectful. And then put that in our neighborhood too. I wanted to address it. So I just sent him a text. I said, hey, I'd love to come talk to you about the sign you have in your yard. Can I come by tomorrow? The next day after work, I got home and talked to my wife for about a half an hour. And I said, okay, I'm going over there. So I walk over there, knock on the door, he greets me, invites me in, and we sit down, and then his wife comes in. And it gets pretty tense right away. They're just like, so why are you here? And I just wanted to make it clear, like, I'm not here to debate the merits of voting for Trump over Kamala Harris. I want to know, what's your intention of putting this very divisive, insulting sign in your yard? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? And they immediately wanted to know what my justification was for not voting for Trump. And I tried not to get drawn into a debate. And unfortunately, I did a couple of times and I kept trying to draw, look, this is not why I'm here. I want to talk about how this sign affects our relationship, our neighborhood, our church. And they, well, it's not meant towards you. I mean, they were very clear. We don't think you're a cuck, but every liberal man is. And I'm like, I don't really care what you think I am. I'm concerned about what this does to our environment. They said, no, we're not taking it down. It's the truth. We stood up and walked out, and the husband and I went out to the porch. We talked for another 5 minutes. And what I told him at the end, you know, I'm glad that we could talk about this. Even though it didn't go the way I wanted it to, I thought, hey, this is great that we can invite me into their home and I can tell them how I feel and they can express how they feel. And I think that's very healthy. Since then, we're fine. You know, there's obviously an underlying tension, but I'm not going to let that keep me from seeing the good in him or his wife. But yeah, I just think it's really poor judgment putting that sign in the yard.
So guys, what happens now?
It's really interesting because I'm the council member to all of these people besides Sister Spilsbury in the ward that works with young women and plays the organ sometimes, right? Like, we had a really beautiful experience 4 years ago when we were receiving a lot of opposition for my vote for the non-discrimination ordinance. I mean, I got 900 emails from people telling me that the Lord was displeased with me and that I needed to read my scriptures and the family proclamation and all the things. And then about 6 months later, we got asked to serve as Ma and Pa for the Stake Pioneer Trek. You know, every part of you just wants to, like, separate yourself from these people who have said horrible things about you and think horrible things about you, but I'll never forget walking on the third day, filthy and muddy and covered in dirt, next to a couple who had been in huge disagreement with our decision, and just feeling so much love for them and the love they showed me, even though we have major disagreements on politics. It was healing. It was very healing for me. And we're right back there again. And I pray that God will help me to see what I do love about some of these people and the good in them and the divinity in them. That's been hard. But we're going to keep trying.
So if anyone's really committed to being peacemaker, you have to confront it, as hard and uncomfortable as it is. You've got to go through it. And so that's what we intend to do.
Well, you two are great. Thank you so much.
Thank
you.
You're
welcome. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the Mormon vote in Arizona, how their faith is informing their politics and dividing their faith community. One of the more intriguing parts of this story is where LDS women fit in all of this. And there's some reason to believe these women swung the election for Joe Biden in 2020. But it's hard to pin this down right now, at least with polling and data. The political scientist and polling expert Quinn Monson says that scenario isn't impossible, but the evidence is thin.
It might have happened, but we don't have a lot of solid data on Arizona Latter-day Saints and their voting behavior, especially when you try to break it down by gender or by generation. So an already small sample size gets even smaller, and margins of error that are large to begin with get even larger. And so you can't say with a lot of certainty that it happened, given the data that are available.
Yeah. Broadly, Quinn, what is the percentage of Latter-day Saint voters who support Donald Trump? Because I want to get to this question about whether there's a difference between Latter-day Saints across the country and Latter-day Saints in Arizona. What is the percentage, just broadly speaking, of Latter-day Saints for Donald Trump?
It varies depending on the state, but in the national data, it could be in the high 60s or in the low 70s, depending on the survey and depending on the location.
Can you break that down for me?
Break it down by state or by gender or by age?
Well, let me actually. Break it down by enthusiasm for Donald Trump. So it seems like there would be...
Yes.
Do it that way, maybe.
Yeah. I think that what's happened from 2016 to the present is that there was initially a resistance among Latter-day Saints to Donald Trump. Thinking back to the 2016 Republican primary, there was not a lot of support for Donald Trump early on. It was pretty thin. Hmm. He manages to get the nomination, and you have, I think, some reluctant support come his way. But then when he wins, I think there's a clear split where you see, I would say, among Latter-day Saints who self-identify as Republicans, I would say somewhere between a third and it starts to approach half, depending on the year, are supportive of Trump. And even enthusiastic, I'd say the enthusiastic group is somewhere between a quarter and up to 40%, depending on the year. And then there's a group that has been consistently anti-Trump, never Trump, that's about 20%, maybe up to a third, depending on the year, but it's a smaller group. Mm-hmm. And then there's a group in the middle, and sort of whatever is the remainder of those two rough estimates, that's also maybe a quarter or so, that are sort of Trump reluctant, that end up supporting him, but are not really very happy about it, that are, you know, pretty loyal Republicans over their lifetimes, but don't feel good about it, but end up supporting him because they don't want to vote Democratic. They like the policies and so forth.
Is that last group the critical group that Kamala Harris's campaign is going for?
Yeah, I think so. I think the key there is to convince that group that what happened in 2020 and in the aftermath of the 2020 election is significant enough that it's time to jump ship and support a Democratic candidate. And she's forming these groups. It's not just among Latter-day Saints. It's generally seeking Republican votes. But she's got a lot of endorsers that I think are trying to give permission to these Republicans to come over and support Harris. Not because they like her policies, but because it's, you know, putting country above party and so on.
Okay, so to the question of whether Arizona Latter-day Saints vote differently from Utah Latter-day Saints. I mean, it would stand to reason that, you know, different places have different effects on Mormon populations. But then you could also argue, well, but the teachings of the church are fairly universal. That must have a big impact. So what do you think? Is there a difference between the two?
I think there's a small difference. I think generally speaking, in all the work I've done, polling data among Latter-day Saints over the years, I don't detect a lot of differences by state or region. Utah Latter-day Saints are not that different from Arizona Latter-day Saints or Idaho Latter-day Saints or even Latter-day Saints elsewhere in the country. They don't look a lot different in their behavior and attitudes about religion and other things. That said, when you look at the AP vote cast data from 2020, and when I look at my own data from Utah and Arizona in 2020, I do see that the Arizona Latter-day Saints were somewhat more supportive of Donald Trump and a little more conservative as a group.
Yeah. So those numbers, Trump won 80% of the Latter-day Saint vote in Arizona, according to those numbers, 72%, I think it was, of the LDS vote in Utah. 8 points there. You don't think that's a lot?
I don't think it's a lot in the sense that these are, especially the estimate from the vote cast survey in Arizona, has a large margin of error. Yeah. It's a relatively small sample size. So I wouldn't make too much of that difference. I would say I believe that there's a difference, whether it's 8 points or 6 points or something else. I'm not sure I would take to the bank. But you know, when you're talking about the difference between 72 and 80, that's also, I mean, it's pretty pro-Trump either way.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. So here's the other question we're interested in. What do we know? And I guess this must be the thing that's puzzling for people who look at these numbers and do these surveys like yourself. It's hard to tease out, I guess, women from men. What do we know about Mormon women as voters versus Mormon men as voters? Can you even say?
Well, the source I'm looking at that I think is the best is from what's called the Cooperative Election Survey. So when I look at presidential vote by gender over time, when you get to 2020, then you look at women, and it's the first group of Latter-day Saints that I see, sort of sizable group that's now voting majority Democratic, or not majority, plurality. So in the numbers here, it's in 2020, millennial and Gen Z women are voting Biden 46%, Trump 43%, 11 other. And it's for the men, it's 57% Trump, 38% Biden. So it's we've got a plurality of younger women voting Democratic for the first time in these data. And so if that continues, right, you add four more years, you've got these women in their 40s. They're becoming a more sizable part of the electorate over the last 4 years. The older men and women who are now voting for Trump and, 90% or more are disappearing. They're dying. And we're poised for a change.
Okay, here's a question that you have no data for, but you might have an opinion. I know you're going to, this is going to drive you crazy, but it seems like for those who are not familiar with LDS people and LDS culture, there's kind of an impression, or might be an impression anyway, about Latter-day Saint women and whether they have their own agency when it comes to making political decisions, that they're somehow supposed to be voting with their husbands. What do you make of that impression, I guess, first of all?
I wish I knew more about where that came from and understood. So I think there are stereotypes about Latter-day Saints and about Latter-day Saint women that I don't know where they originate. They come from the air somewhere. But I don't see it. I don't see it in the Latter-day Saint women I interact with. In fact, I think that as a group, there that would be offensive.
Yeah. Having spoken as we did to Latter-day Saint women, they're not crazy about that stereotype either.
Yeah. I can't imagine they would be.
Yeah. There is a story that we asked them about, and you've heard as well that. It was quoted in a New York Times piece about the Latter-day Saint voters in Arizona. In the article, it mentioned some LDS women are – quoted a Mesa resident who said that she knew of women who had placed Post-it notes in women's restrooms in ward houses. And I wanted to get them to respond to that. And since our conversation with them, there have been more and more stories, not about Latter-day Saint bathroom stalls, but like throughout the country where you have these Post-it notes – where women are saying to women via these Post-it notes that they no one needs to know who they vote for, that they can cast a vote for Harris and feel fine about it no matter whatever else might be going on in their lives. I don't know. What do you make of that?
I don't know. Maybe that's just part of the larger idea that there is a considerable amount of, I think, social pressure within the Latter-day Saint community broadly among women and men to, you know, vote Republican and be Republican. I think that's been true for years. It's not easy to be a Latter-day Saint Democrat, especially if you're in a ward or in a community that's majority Republican. So I think, you know, maybe it's easier to be a Latter-day Saint Democrat and live in the Bay Area or in New York City or something, but or in the avenues of Salt Lake. I don't know. But you know, if you're living in Orem or Alpine or Mesa, it's not necessarily easy to be an outspoken Latter-day Saint Democrat. And I think this is just part of a larger trend about giving people permission or permission structure to sort of buck that trend. And I think part of that is probably occurring among younger Latter-day Saint women and men, but especially among women who are going to realize as they start talking to each other about this that more of them are supporting Kamala Harris than they realized, perhaps.
Quinn Monson, he's an associate professor of political science at Brigham Young University. We'll take a break, come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for the Radio West podcast comes from Harmon's Grocery, committed to excellent service and friendly smiles. Your food is our passion.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we've been talking about the Mormon vote, not here in Utah, but the one in Arizona, where it could really make a difference in this year's presidential race. As we heard from the political scientist Quinn Monson a moment ago, there isn't a lot of data that helps us understand the difference between how Mormon men are thinking about the election compared to Mormon women. So we asked some Latter-day Saint women in the East Valley of the Phoenix area to join us, because there's been a lot of reporting about how a growing number of LDS women are rethinking their political affiliation. We had with us Jane Anderson. She's with the group Mormon Women for Ethical Government, along with Amy Waddell. She's with a political action group called Arizona Republicans Who Believe in Treating Others with Respect, and Dawn Giles. She's a board member for Arizona Republicans for Harris. And we started with the moment that they all broke from the party and Donald Trump. Dawn went first.
In 2016, the deal breaker for me was some of the comments he made, particularly the infamous one about women.
Amy, how about you?
When he started making comments about immigrants and refugees and POWs, and then when it came out that he bragged about sexually assaulting women, it changed from just not wanting to vote for him and being very much willing to do what I could to stop him.
Jane, does that sound like the same kind of equation you were working out?
Yeah, there are so many complaints that I have, but I am a parent of a child who's severely disabled. And so in particular, when he mocked the disabled reporter, that really hit home to me that he was not going to respect anyone or anything except himself. And then I studied constitutional law in graduate school. So I kind of went from, yeah, this isn't my guy, to when January 6th happened, thinking, if I don't stand up and stand out and talk about the rule of law and the peaceful transfer of power, how am I going to live with myself?
Is it fair to say that if it weren't for Donald Trump, some of you anyway would be voting Republican? Like, that wouldn't really be a question right now.
Yes, for sure. I, in high school, was the vice president of Teenage Republicans. As soon as I could vote, I think it was Ronald Reagan. I became a precinct committeeman, always very involved in the Republican Party. My husband has been an elected official, and we've been very involved as Republicans. I still agree with conservatism. I just don't agree with Trumpism.
Jane?
Yeah, I'm a conservative Republican. There's no question about that.
Amy, what about you?
I consider myself a conservative Republican as well.
Can I ask you to do a little political analysis for me? Even if you think of yourselves as civilians in this way, I guess the question is, do you understand how important you are? And by you, I mean Latter-day Saint voters in general, but Latter-day Saint women in particular. Do you have a sense of how important you are in the scheme of things, you know, in a crucial swing state? How are you thinking about your importance here? Jane, you first.
Yeah, I actually am highly involved with a group called Mormon Women for Ethical Government. And we recognize that when we listen to our faith leaders and how they talk about civic engagement, how they recommend qualities for candidates, integrity, compassion, and service to others. And as women in Arizona and faithful women, we are going to be very mindful, not just of what people say, but also what they do. And I think absolutely, you know, we have just under 500,000 members of our faith in the state, mm-hmm. many of whom are women. We can actually be the deciding factor.
Dawn, answer that question. And also this one, I'll tack one more on. Do you think you, and by you, I mean Latter-day Saint women, do you think you swung the election for Joe Biden in 2020? There's some who actually really believe that.
I do. Huh. I'd like to think we did. And I think we are in a unique position now, especially not only as women, LDS women, but women in Arizona, because Arizona is so in play right now. And when you look at Joe Biden won Arizona by 10,000 votes,
yeah.
I think a lot of LDS women made up that 10,000.
Hmm. I wanted to get you to, if you would, react to what seems like this impression of Latter-day Saint women in Mormon culture from the outside. And it's kind of like this stereotype. There seems to be this kind of vague idea that women in your church are supposed to be aligned with their husbands in their political affiliations, whatever they might be. Jane, will you begin on that one?
You know, as a woman who worked on Wall Street and has a master's degree in political theory and yeah. taught at a university for 8 years, it's pretty humorous to me to think that that is the impression that someone might have of me. We are absolutely taught that we are agents and that we have a voice and that our voice is unique and it matters. It just so happens that my husband and I do align politically, particularly when it comes to Trump, but I would have no problem having a different opinion than he would have.
Dawn, let me add a kind of a specific element before I get to you to respond. The New York Times wrote this piece about Latter-day Saint voters in Arizona. And in the piece, it mentioned that some LDS women might be casting their votes for Kamala Harris kind of discreetly, even though their husbands might support Donald Trump. And it quoted one particular resident in Mesa, Arizona, who said she had heard of, this is where it may be just this kind of urban legend thing, but she said that she had heard of women who were taking these post-it notes into women's restrooms in their ward houses and just reminding them that their husbands don't need to know who you vote for. Like, what do you make of that as a story, and how do you react to the general idea implied there?
Well, I don't like that idea at all. I'd like to think that marriages are stronger than that. There's been plenty of times that my husband and I have canceled each other's votes and done it in a very forthright way, where I've said, no, and you're absolutely wrong on that, and I'm going to vote this way. And then we kind of laughingly take our ballots and mail them in. I think that's more of a marriage problem than a political problem, and more of a, I think it's a stereotype to think that there are women that are unable to express to their spouse their opinions. I would like to think that women are stronger and can speak out more willingly than that. And I know they do.
One thing that I would point out that I think is unique in our faith, we have a lay ministry, and so we meet according to geographic boundaries. So one thing that's very interesting is that, unlike with other churches where they might choose, I really like this pastor, or I really like to attend at this time because these people seem to agree with me, we are assigned to attend and serve with people that we may not agree politically. And in today's world of siloed media, that's unique. And so I really would rebut that notion that somehow people have to hold their beliefs in secret and can't come out with difference, because in fact, that's how our church operates.
I would like to add to that, though, and it's actually a little bit in opposition of what you just heard, just because I work with volunteers who are with our PAC, and I am the first point of contact for a lot of these people who choose to volunteer, and they tell me horror stories. We had a volunteer who wanted to help us distribute signs, and she told us that she had to put her signs in her car. And she had to find places where she could meet up people in her car because she was afraid her husband would find out. I had talked to a volunteer of ours who she signed her name to an op-ed that was written. And she had one of her ward members go around and knock on every door to tell her other ward members how horrible it was that she signed this op-ed. And it was about, and at the time it was, she supported Joe Biden over Donald Trump. We don't want that. And I think that our church leaders teach, don't do that. But it is a reality that I feel like Donald Trump as a leader, this is what he does. He goes around and he makes sure that everybody is loyal to him. And if you aren't loyal to him, then not only are you just different from me or you're just choosing something different, but he calls you names, he ostracizes. And I don't think it's our church leaders do it. I think our church leaders are teaching the exact opposite of that. But I think that Donald Trump is having an effect on people of our faith. And I think that they are mimicking and doing what he does.
Yeah, when people put their political identity above their religious identity, then that is the behavior that you will see on that outcome. When people are sustained and focused on their religious identity, then that's not going to happen.
Can I just identify what seemed to be one of those LDS tenets? It's that Christian ideal of being a peacemaker. Jane, would you say something about this? This is something that you've been hearing in general conference talks.
Yeah, being a peacemaker is truly an important role that our prophet today has asked us to take on. And we've even been given really specific ways that that looks like in civil society, in politics. President Oakes, who, you know, is a former Supreme Court Justice of Utah, former professor at the University of Chicago Law School, he said on contested issues, we should moderate and unify. And so, you know, there's a difference between peacemaking, which is everyone should go to their corners and not come forward and have any disagreement. There shouldn't be any compromise. Everyone just don't talk about what we don't have in common. That is not peacemaking. Peacemaking looks like speaking truth, come forward. The art of the Constitution is a spirit of compromise. That is absolutely what we should engage in. That's the process of peacemaking.
What other sort of messages are you hearing from church leaders, from the church itself? I know, of course, it's officially neutral, but are you getting any sort of guidance about this particular race if you squint real hard? Like, are there some messages that might, you know, point to something that suggests the church's highest ranking leaders might not approve of Donald Trump as a person or a candidate? Don, are you noticing anything there?
Yes, I think I would say President Oakes' talk in the last conference, I felt was somewhat directed at this. I can't remember his exact words, but I remember thinking, okay, I wonder how this is going to be twisted by the pro-Trump people to explain their side, because I certainly heard it as a moderation, peacemaking message.
Well, the quote from President Oakes was, "Let us qualify for his blessings by using the language and methods of peacemaking." And that's specifically regarding policies and in public actions. And so there's no dancing around that. In the statement recently that the church put out specifically on their political neutrality, they also referenced their comments just after January 6th, which encourage citizens to be active, exercise the right to vote, but always demonstrating Christ-like love and civility in political discourse. And Donald Trump, to me, his style of leadership does not promote civility, Christ-like love, compromise. In fact, it's the antithesis. He absolutely leads by fear. Now, I don't mean that all of his followers follow that, but I don't believe that he is the leader that we need at this time to demonstrate those qualities as I see them read by our church leaders.
Why do so many Latter-day Saints support Donald Trump, do you think?
I wish I knew. I think it goes back to tradition, you know, that there's just been a longstanding conservatism within our faith. And I don't think there are people, they are hearing that Kamala Harris is a Marxist. She's a communist. She's a baby killer, you know, all these terrible things about her, but they're really not paying close enough attention to hear the policies. I also think there's a little bit of pride involved in that I may have made a mistake. I may realize now that this is a bad situation and that this person is actually not good, but I can't back down now. I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to admit my mistake.
So I think there's a lot of well-intentioned good people that really just want to do the right thing. But when you are bombarded with fear-based messaging, you tend to retreat, and especially if you only engage with media that supports a bias that you already hold, it really creates a vacuum where you don't no longer have a sense outside of that communication that's coming from a leader. And so I hope that as members of our faith, we can step aside from fear-based messaging and follow the example of our prophet who leads with hope.
Amy?
I think the Republican Party for many years has tried to portray themselves as a party for Christians. And I think that there's been a movement that a lot of the Christian churches feel like they need to align with that. And that a lot of people feel like if they don't vote for Republicans, then they're voting against God. And I do not feel like this is being taught at our church at all. It is the exact opposite. We are told that we need to be wise. And in fact, we were counseled that a political party cannot express all of the things that are going to be important for your faith. And so it actually is not wise to do a straight party ticket. They actually said that. But I think that the Republican Party is teaching that. And I think that, you know, just the same as all of the other Christian religions, I think Latter-day Saints can fall for that as well. Where you do see a difference, though, and this is why I think, you know, you're talking to us today, is that because our leaders are actually teaching the opposite of that. We have people who feel that they don't need to be allegiance to a political party and that they can make their own decisions about that. And that's why I think you're going to see in Utah, where typically speaking, the Republican candidate in years past got up to 80, I think Mitt Romney got up to 80% of the vote. I think you're going to see way less in Utah. It's going to be a little bit harder to know exactly how many people in Arizona who are Latter-day Saints who are going to contribute to a win for Kamala Harris. I think that it might be a little bit harder to notice, but I think if you look at the percentage that Donald Trump is going to drop in Utah, there's probably a similar percent in the 500,000 LDS voters here. I think you're going to see a similar percentage drop in those people who would have normally voted for Republicans who are now going to vote for some Democrats.
That's Amy Waddell. She's a team leader for the PAC Arizona Republicans who believe in treating others with respect, along with Jane Anderson. She's the protecting democracy specialist for Mormon Women for Ethical Government. And Don Giles, she's a board member for Arizona Republicans for Harris and co-chair of Haley Voters for Harris. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Support for Radio West comes from our members. Find out how at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Brittany Romanello is a cultural anthropologist at Arizona State University. She's done fieldwork about the voting behavior of LDS church members in Arizona. And all of that means she's just done lots and lots of interviews and had conversations with Latter-day Saints. Romanello grew up in the church, so she's familiar with the culture, and she knows it's endlessly fascinating to the outside world.
It seems to be a very constant conversation, especially as we see more diverse representation of Mormon stories in the media. And then every election, at least in my recent memory since 2012, since Mitt Romney ran, there has been a lot of focus on how will the Mormons vote? Mm. What do they think? The swing and influence that they have.
Yeah. There's always this question that comes up in the conversation about Mormon voters, and that is, have their political opinions, their inclinations, their, you know, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, their ideology about politics, has that overtaken their religious identity and their sense of their faith? Mm-hmm. What do you think about that question?
I think it's an important one. And it's definitely one I've seen in my years of fieldwork. It's a conversation that took place, you know, in the back of Relief Society rooms and, you know, between hymns at church and activities and people's homes. And it's something I've seen in the interviews I've done with the Arizona Youth Identity Project here at ASU, where we did collect a lot of novel data on Mormon voters in 2020 through 2023. And yes, I would tell you data-wise, there is a large concern that allegiance to a certain political party, it's the new idolatry, and that, and I know that's very spicy, perhaps spicy to say, but it is an overarching concern for a lot of members I've spoken to. I would say it is an issue. It's not just an issue I perceive as a person who grew up LDS, who still has majority LDS family, my mother's side. It's something I'm seeing in the data and how people are articulating the internal conflicts within the community.
Okay, so culture seems to be telling Latter-day Saints one thing. They're getting something from the culture, mm-hmm. it seems like. But what about doctrine and spiritual teachings? Is that different? Like, there's the culture message, then there's the spiritual message. It seems, is there a distinction between those? Because clearly the question I guess we're getting at is, how can Latter-day Saints justify voting for someone who has a questionable character like Donald Trump? Or, as in the story that came up in the top of our show, mm-hmm. that was asked of the Spillsbury's when they were having that dispute with their neighbor and ward member about, you know, these lawn signs. You know, the neighbors asked, how can you justify voting for a Democrat, for Kamala Harris? So how do you understand that distinction in those instances?
I'm going to make a very blanket statement from my personal and professional experience. I think the experience in the LDS church culture and society is that sometimes we struggle with the idea of nuance and also the fact that people are multidimensional. And I will argue that because I think that because there is a belief that there is one great divine plan and a very specific set of steps that each person needs to take in this life or the next to reach their eternal potential, I think that that mentality of that there is one way to do things or an ideal way to think about things and a set of choices to make, I can 1,000% see how that trickles down to people's everyday choices and perhaps some of the inter-community policing and judgment that can happen when you're living in and worshiping and socializing in a very geographically set social boundary and also physical boundary, right? Because wards and stakes are confined by their geography and where people live. But I think a lot of people are, in my experience, are struggling to reconcile, like, what side and teachings of Jesus resonate the most with me? You could have an issue like poverty, and you could have two LDS people who take very different sides of that. They could have the traditional LDS ideology of, like, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps, a very prosperity gospel view of things. And I could talk to another LDS person in the same ward who's attending the same Sunday school classes mm-hmm. who says God is not a government. And the way we teach in the church is that everyone should be pooling in to provide for the people who have less. And therefore, I'm going to support policies that create a sense of community. I really think the emphasis on individual agency, along with people's lived experiences, perhaps some of the hypocrisies they may point out in themselves or in other people who they interact with at church, these are all shaping very different outcomes that result in what we've seen in Mesa, right? Which is like yard wars and mm-hmm. people having little tussles in the parking lot or in, you know, the hallways in church between meetings. And I've noticed it since moving to Arizona in 2017. It's a very ongoing, just above the surface, beneath the surface tension that seems to always be simmering.
There's this phenomenon, I guess you could call it, going on this year in the election. And it's what seems like this organic effort to remind women that their vote is private and that no one needs to know who you're voting for. Various news organizations have been reporting about this. Women in mostly Republican, pretty seems like red states, are leaving these post-it notes with that message in, you know, public women's restrooms. The New York Times reported this had happened in a ward house in Mesa, Arizona.
Yeah.
What do you make of that? What does that tell you about women in Republican areas? And particularly, does that tell you something about Latter-day Saint women and the messages that they tell to each other in maybe in private that they wouldn't elsewhere?
Yeah, again, I think because of the patriarchal nature, the sanctioned inequality of how many things operate in the LDS church and therefore LDS culture, there's a lot of private conversations that are just between women. There's a lot of support systems that are just between women. Women are actively trying to create these spaces outside of the spaces they share with men as a way to leverage having their own identity and their own interests. And of course, politics and sharing ideas about what they've been reading and about their experiences comes up. And I think, again, the fear of contention that is so prevalent in the LDS church, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, like, it's important to not create contention. It's important to be a peacemaker. And politics was one area where people felt very afraid to rock the boat. But I think there is so many mixed political marriages in the church, with women leaning more progressive and men leaning more conservative, that I've seen. And it's definitely happening here in Arizona as well. And I think it's very much the product of, like, how do I keep coexisting in these relationships and stay true to, like, my individual agency and, like, what I feel God wants me to do and vote for? You know, a lot of this is very motivated by that same socialization I spoke about earlier and the same desire to really do what people feel God is moving them to do. Of course, people want to avoid the negative consequences of that, but at some point, because I think there's been so much mobilization online, I think I'm seeing more and more women feel empowered to just outright disagree with their husbands and outright disagree with their male family members or their fathers.
I think it's interesting to see what all of this has revealed about the country's perception of Latter-day Saints. When you have two well-funded campaigns come into a place and target that specific demographic, what does it tell us about the way the rest of the country perceives Latter-day Saints, those outside of this place and outside of this culture? What do you see in all of that?
I think Mormons are always an afterthought politically until they become important. And I think both campaigns really did very little planning, very little market research, one might say. I think there's an assumption on the Trump campaigns that Mormons will just vote Republican, so we don't really need to try that hard. It's disappointing to me that in 2024, or maybe this is like a, like, we're all getting pranked. I have no idea. But to see, like, beer cozies and coffee mugs on LDS for Trump website, I'm like, are we just getting trolled? Like, what's going on here? For Kamala, I think there has been an investment to trying to understand what LDS people are about. But I think that that campaign knows that LDS people are an important part of winning the electorate here. But I don't know how much research I can really say. I mean, her comments in Phoenix the other week felt very generic, like, oh, religious people and your faith is important to me. you could say that about any group. And so I don't know if I can say I've seen enough outreach and sincere investment in understanding who we are as a people be put in by that campaign. I don't know how effective that will be at getting swing votes. And I think, again, the assumption on Trump's end is like they have it in the bag, which is also not necessarily true, especially for women. Especially for women.
That's Brittany Romanello. She's a Mellon postdoctoral fellow and faculty associate at Arizona State University in the anthropology department. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. We're on YouTube at KUER 90.1, on Instagram at Radio West. And you can email us at radiowest@kuer.org. Stevie Shaughnessy is our intern. The program is produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Carrie Watson is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.